What's the not a cliche, what's the thing he does?
An idiom.
Okay.
Welcome to Price of Grace, a podcast from Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Blake McCullough. Just Blake McCullough. Don is having to be an adult, and he's living in his day job today. And that being the case, so Blake, what are we doing today?
So today, what are we doing today? What does he say on today's episode?
So what are we doing today? Today we are, the title of today's episode
is a good old-fashioned Q&A, in which we will answer your questions, people who follow us on Facebook. I don't think Don put it on Twitter.
I'll tweet it. Do you want me to tweet it?
Yeah, tweet it and see if we can get anybody while we're going. We'll be answering your questions, and I'm trying to think of an idiom, but they're all weird. You think we'll get $1 million question?
Penny for your thoughts.
Penny for your thoughts. That's fine. We've already done that.
Yeah, but I think it still fits.
All right. Now, we have some fun ones, so we'll start with those. Carver asked approximately 13 questions, which is probably only right. We have to answer all of them because I did use his likeness in our post to gain attention. Because if you post something without a picture, no one's going to see it. But if you post a picture that Carver took on my phone of himself, a selfie, if you will, then people will pay attention. So Carver's first question is, this is a good question, and my answer has probably changed. What is objectively the best gas station?
I know my answer.
Go for it.
Like, I'm assuming that it has to be local?
I don't think it has to be. He says objectively the best.
I think objectively the best is Dodge's.
So that's fair. Their gas is cheap. There was that one time that people's card numbers were getting stolen from their gas pumps, and we forgive them for that.
I did not know about that.
Right after we started going to Mercy Hill.
Whoa, didn't know that.
But their food's solid. They got a lot of solid stuff. But you know who I think might be beating Dodge's now? I've gone a few times. It just opened up just south of the church. Quick Trip.
Oh, I haven't been there yet. No, I haven't. Is it great?
They have breakfast pizza there.
I'm out on that.
It's pretty good. But it's like going to Moe's. Like, you walk in and they're like, welcome to Quick Trip.
Seriously.
Yeah, they're really nice. You know, no one's like, I guess no one's jaded or anything from working there because it's only open for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Fair, so nobody's sad about it yet.
But they're really kind. They got everything you could ever want. It's huge in there. It's always clean. You can order food and they'll like make it for you in real time.
For it.
But I would say if we're not going local, I'd probably have to be Bucky's just because of the sheer magnitude of what they have there. If I could go non-local.
Bucky's.
But the problem is there's not enough of them.
Yeah, but I tell you what though, whoever does their marketing crushes it.
Of course.
Because like everybody knows what a Bucky's is.
Yeah.
But do you think I think that if it became an everywhere thing, it would lose its novelty.
Yeah, we'd probably value it as much as we value like Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So this is a really, well, we'll save this. We'll do a little bit more banter.
Okay.
Banter. Let's see. Josh Warren wants to know if Carver should simply commit to a mustache and not whatever he's got going on with his chin.
Wow. Is this, wow, you put that on there. You actually put his picture on there.
This is why we have a Products of Grace Facebook page. We used to, back in the day, share with the church.
Yeah.
And,
okay. The master producer shows his face.
Oh, yeah. Sup, Charles. So we had to make our own Facebook page so we can post stuff like this. Carver also wants to know He wants a fit check. Do you know what a fit check is, Lawson? No. A fit check is, what are you wearing? What's your style
today? He wants a fit check from who? From us?
From us, yeah. What's your style? What are you going with? We actually are wearing the same thing. Short sleeve dress shirt.
I feel uncomfortable.
Are you wearing jeans?
Of course I'm wearing jeans.
Yeah, that was a funny question. I'm wearing some like hybrid khakis. They're khakis, but they're more comfy, you know?
Comfy khakis.
Yeah. Lawson's wearing a hat backwards.
Only when I'm recording. Don't put that out.
Oh, that's fair. It's straight the rest of the time.
Yeah, I only did it when recording because it fits on my head better.
Fair. Okay. Chadley wants to know, okay, you have to fix the toilet at work. Hypothetically speaking, it's now been 3 or 4 weeks and you keep forgetting to fix the toilet. Do you go ahead and knock it out, fix it, or do you just see how long it goes before it gets fixed?
I know, you knock it out. There's not, like, we don't leave toilets.
Yeah. So when I was in college, we had this inkling that the staff at our dorm was not cleaning the hallways. And this guy left one of those cutie oranges, you know, clementines, if you will, in the hallway floor. And we just all agreed not to pick it up until...
Just to see?
To see when it would get... And it never got picked up. It just eventually became part of the floor.
No.
It turned black, just kind of joined the floor.
No, that's gross.
Yeah. So I'm kind of on that side of it. Like, yeah. Anyway. Michael Hefner wants to know, how many shrimp is too many?
These people ask weird questions.
How many shrimp is too many?
I don't know the answer to this.
When you go to the beach, do you go to the shrimp basket?
Yes, for the crab claws.
So I go to the shrimp basket for like the, you know, they have like you pay the price and you can just eat however much of that thing that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And we go on the shrimp night. And I don't know what the number is, but I love shrimp. How do you feel about shrimp?
Like fried shrimp and grilled shrimp, boiled shrimp's disgusting.
Wow.
Yeah, boiled shrimp is trash.
I'm like, I'm Bubba Gump, like shrimp anyway, it's fine with me.
No, I do.
Especially like blackened.
I have grown in my desire for shrimp. Like I used to not like it at all. Mm-hmm. But what made me start liking it was hibachi. Because hibachi shrimp.
That's good.
It's good.
It's good.
And then I went, I started doing fried shrimp from time to time. And fried shrimp, if it's the appropriate batter, is hard to beat.
All right. Well, you have it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Justin Lohmeyer, friend of the program.
Please tell me Justin has a real question.
No? But I think it's hilarious, and it's gotten so many likes.
Okay.
You're driving down the highway psyched because you just hit play on the newest Mercy Hill Sunday sermon, and your elder asks you to stand in reverence to the word. What do you do?
You better stand up, man.
That's right. Well, you know, you can do that kind of thing where you like pull on the steering wheel and kind of like, stand a little bit.
What's it called? Where you like flat back it? Like,
yeah. You get off.
That's, like kids do when you're trying to put them in the car seat?
Yeah, and you get off this chair. So it's like, it's close enough.
It counts.
It's like when we're riding down the road before, like maybe before school or something, and Isaiah will be like, or praying, and he'll be like, close your eyes, daddy. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. All right. We have any more fun questions, more silly questions?
Wow, these are thin.
Let's see.
Pum, 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 pum.
All right. I think that is... Oh, Michael wants to know, Michael Hefner, friend of the program, wants to know what breed of dog each of us is. And I only want to answer this question because Don's not here, so we can answer for him.
Oh, what's Don?
What? I don't know. I'm just trying to... What breed of dog do you feel like you are? And then what breed of dog do you feel like Don is since he's not here? And we could do Charles. He's not here to speak for himself either.
I got it. All right, what do you got? All right, so Don?
Yeah.
All right, let me build it out.
Okay.
Okay. Don's a Rottweiler.
Okay.
All right, so here.
Let us know.
Hold on,
here. All right.
First, appearance.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So based on appearance... Rottweilers have a dangerous disposition.
Yeah, they look scary.
They look scary, right? When you see like there are a couple of dogs that when you see a Rottweiler, a Doberman, a German Malinois, or a German Shepherd, right? Like you look at them, there's some intimidation there. Hmm. So because Don has somewhat of a resting aggressive, intimidating face.
Yeah.
Some people can think, oh, well, he can be a little scary, but when you get up close to him, his disposition is actually rather sunny.
That's good.
So that's why I think Rottweiler, from a distance, you're like, oh, I don't know, maybe he's scary. And then you get close and you're like, oh, he's just a lab.
Yeah. That's super fair.
Yeah. But he's not, but he doesn't greet like a lab. You know, like labs greet a particular way.
Right.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
I don't know. I was thinking about Charles.
I think Charles is a border collie. Because he's like, you know, he's always wrangling things really well.
This is real.
He's shepherding things. He's helping. He is. And border collies, I feel like, are just chill. He's chill. And he's just a good helper.
Are border collies chill?
I think so. Are they not?
I don't think border collies, but I will say this is a compliment to
maybe
intelligence.
Maybe like a herding dog.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's always rounding something up, like you said. I like that.
That's good.
Yep. Yep.
What kind of dog is Beethoven? Because that's kind of how I feel right now with my hair.
That is,
you know,
yes.
Saint Bernard.
Saint Bernard, yeah.
That's kind of how I feel.
I don't know.
What do you think? What about you? What are you, Lawson? Bulldog. Bulldog? American Bulldog?
I don't.
English, that's the big one, like the tall one, right?
I don't know. I think
there's a shepherd. You could be a shepherd dog. That'd be a cop out.
That would be a cop out. I don't know if that'd be true either. I was telling somebody today, I was having lunch and they said, so I heard you say once that you just didn't, oh, I was talking, I said, I don't really feel like I had the giftings of a church planter. And he said, well, what are those? And I was like, well, the ability to like execute something, like I can have an idea, but the execution of said plan is normatively not my go-to. It's like I have the idea, someone else then makes the plan, and then I show up and do it.
I feel like that is church planting.
But that's, so that was what he said. He responded, he was like, no, I think that is the spirit.
And you guys got to be dreamers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have to be, toxically positive. I've never forgotten this, and it's one of my favorite statements.
About that.
Toxically positive, that's me. I don't know what I'd be. If I had to pick something, I don't know.
What's the dog that like keeps talking for a really long time? Like keeps barking.
Like a poodle?
No.
A chihuahua.
What? I'm trying to think
a
of
beagle.
Like a howling dog.
A beagle. Beagles howl.
Basset hound.
Basset. You're not putting me as a basset.
No,
hound.
But I'm saying, I'm trying to draw this in to this week that we've had together. So did you look and see how long your sermon was?
An hour and 12 minutes.
It's kind of like when you're sitting at home and you're like, surely the dog's going to quit barking at some point. What was it? An hour and 12 minutes?
It was an hour and six minutes, no. I think. Yeah, it was. It was an hour and six or an hour and nine. Can I tell you something?
Yeah, tell me.
I used to be aware of time while I preached. Like I would think about how much time.
An hour and 9 minutes.
An hour and 9 minutes.
And 12 seconds.
Yeah, so I used to be aware of time when I preach. Now when I walk up to preach, time is no longer a reality.
So... I was talking to a dear brother on Monday, Kyle Cook. I was talking to him and I was like, listen, yesterday Isaiah was being especially
trying
rambunctious as me and him are the only two sitting in the pew together. And he like won't sit still and he won't listen and all these things. And I started thinking, I was like, has he been preaching for a long time or is Isaiah just being terrible today? And then the first thing I did when I left church, I was like, I have to see how long that sermon was. It was an hour and 10 minutes. Is that your longest?
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured.
So Beth had Rowan up front, and Rowan actually did really well, but Beth said, yeah, those last 10 minutes, though, Rowan all of a sudden started saying things like, Mama, is Daddy almost done? But honestly, you know what's crazy about that? I had less notes than I've had in a long time.
That's how it goes.
And that was the, because I was at that church planner conference, I told you I finished late. I finished at 1 a.m. that
Super
night.
Late.
Yeah. It was a, it was a, um,
Maybe that's what makes people preach long, is finishing at 1 a.m. because that's normally when I finish too.
I enjoyed that sermon though.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was a great sermon. I thought it was beautiful. And I really appreciated what I heard of it when I wasn't trying to keep Isaiah sit down. Yeah. But like, I didn't, that's what I'm saying. That's why I was like, it didn't feel that long sermon wise. It felt long because of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, has it really been that long? And it had.
Yep. It was also Lord's Table Day.
It was.
Yeah. So it was added in there too. That's true. I mean, longest sermon, period. You can't change that.
All right. I think that's all our fun questions. So let's find out in the rest of this episode if we can answer your questions.
Wow. Charles is laughing hysterically. Charles, just come in here.
This is a great book. I mean, great question.
It's, you know, about, you want to be in here. What?
This is a great question about books. Carver wants to know, top three books you have read or listened to this year. Carver will not allow you to say you've read a book that you've listened to.
He's wrong.
I agree. Okay. He and Hayden Roberts. I don't know if Hayden listens to the program, but Hayden, you're wrong.
Hayden does, but I actually had lunch with Hayden today, and he's behind because he doesn't drive as much in his job.
Okay, well, in a couple of months, he's going to find out publicly that he's wrong about this. So
it does count.
Top three books you have read or listened to this year. And I'm going to pull out my, I write them down, so I'm going to pull out my list so I can choose my three while you answer.
I have been reading on I guess it's a book. It's a treatise. Mm. Does that count?
Treatise.
It's a treatise on the immutability of God by Stephen Charnock.
Oh, wow.
That was a great joy. Charles is joining us in the booth.
Welcome, Charles.
So treatise on the immutability of God. Secondly, I think it was this year. The mystery of Christ, His kingdom, and His covenants. Really, I mean, just an excellent book. And then something I've never done, which is probably somewhat surprising. I read the second part of The Pilgrim's Progress.
Oh, about his wife and kids.
And it was excellent, and it blessed me.
Shout out.
So those are my three. But I don't read like most people read. So I probably read like 100 pages a week, but I read as 100 pages a week out of 15 different books,
right?
While studying one thing in particular. So books are resources to me. They're not like
for sermons.
I sat down and read this book. It's like no. I had a thought around when I was looking at Israel's my firstborn son, I probably read 200 pages that week on that particular thing. But it was like, I went down this rabbit hole and I couldn't come out of it until I landed.
Super fair.
Yeah.
Charles, do you have three books that you've read this year that are your favorite?
Man, I don't know if I've read three books in the past 3 years.
That's not real. You do book clubs with your people.
What?
With your work people. Don't tell me
I hadn't
that.
Done one of those in a long time.
I know what you're about.
I'll tell you the last three books that I've read-ish.
All right.
Hit us. All right. So I've been reading When I Don't Desire God by Piper.
Good.
And
shout out to John.
Yep.
Except for his views on coffee and church. He's just wrong about it.
And Final Justification. Yeah. But okay, go ahead. What else?
Those are on the same plane.
I've been reading... I started reading a book by a guy named Miles McKee about
I ate barbecue with him once.
Eternal security of the believer.
Good.
I got news. Yeah. The believer is eternally secure.
Yeah, that's good. She just pretty much says that over and over.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah, it's great. People just need lots to be reminded. Of Bible.
90% of preaching is telling people they're safe.
Mm. Yep. Yep. And The Pleasantness of a Religious Life by Matthew Henry.
Yeah, you've been on that one for a while.
Yeah, I finished that one a while back. Hmm. But I don't know. Also, the Bible. I read that mostly.
Shout out to the Bible.
Y'all, I was thinking.
Just restarted the chronological Bible, and I'm in like the end of Genesis right now. You know, like goes through Job in the middle and stuff. And I've just been like, you know, just been a minute since I read Genesis. And I was like, man, shout out to Genesis. I just love this. What were you saying? Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you.
I was having lunch with a few pastor friends yesterday, and we were talking about, he started talking about what he was preaching through, and he was preaching through Hebrews, and their small group or something like that is doing Matthew. And he said, I wish Don was here for this one because he would love it, but he was like, bro, like, if you're going through Hebrews, you have to be going through Matthew. It's just step by step. I said, and do you know why? And he said, why? I said, because they're both just the Exodus.
Oh my God.
And he says, wait, what do you mean? And so I walk him through the whole thing and he's like, hey, write that and send it to me.
Oh my gosh.
And so like, the reason I said is because the Bible's fun. It's like all the other books are, they're fun, they're enjoyable, but there's just so much joy in being like, hey, I'm gonna stare at this for 3 hours, and on the other side of it, I'm gonna be happy.
Yeah, I've been in Hebrews is where I'm at recently, so, and all up in like chapter 12 and stuff, so the last few weeks, y'all have been quoting a lot from that, so it's been good.
It's true.
From what? I'm sorry, I missed that.
From Hebrews 12.
Hebrews 12.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't, I want to do like 3 God books and 3 non-God books. Is that possible? Is that allowed?
You can do whatever you want.
It's my program today.
That's right.
So this year, my 3 non-religious books that I have really enjoyed are Shoe Dog. It's Phil Knight. You know who Phil Knight is? The founder of Nike. It's his autobiography. Hmm. Really fascinating, really interesting.
You're fascinating and interesting.
Sorry. No Country for Old Men. Cormac McCarthy recently died.
They made a movie about that.
It did.
Okay.
Book's better, but the movie's also good. And then I've been working through, no one hurt me, but Harry Potter. I've read like 2 or 3 of them this year. Like 2.5. But for my like Christian books that I've really enjoyed, I read that Metaxas, excuse me, Carver, I listened to that Eric Metaxas biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating.
You should talk to Ken about that.
Did he read it?
Ken O'Brien is like big Bonhoeffer guy right now. That's what he's studied and read recently.
Which really put me on, like I read Life Together and The Cost of Discipleship. I liked the biography better than I liked those. I mean, I liked those.
Yeah.
I always read What is the Gospel every year, and I always enjoy it, so I'll count that.
Do you have a stack of those at home?
Yep, I just give them out.
That's what I thought.
There's like 6 of them, but they're in boxes right now.
Because you're moving.
Lord willing.
Yep.
At some point I'll move in.
Do we have to move all those books again?
Yep. You didn't have to move them last time.
I helped you move them last time.
Not last time, when we moved them into the storage.
It was 2 times ago. I helped you move them from the apartment downtown into your truck. And
there was more that day. There's more. It was COVID. We only really got like a couple people to help. It was weird times.
Yeah, okay.
We didn't know who was hanging out.
As long as I didn't have to be there, I'm good.
I'm trying to think of my third, like... Oh, I read again The Godly Man's Picture by Thomas Watson.
Oh.
Fantastic book. Really beautiful. Puritan. Okay.
Ooh, I remember a not God book that I've been reading.
All right, hit me.
Been
Charles.
Reading to the I've told you about this, but a series of books by a guy named Ralph Moody.
Yes.
They are super good.
What's
recommend
it called?
Them. He wrote 9 books.
I didn't know if the series had a name.
The series does not have a name. But the first one's called Little Britches, and then we're on the third one, which is Marry a Man Company. But really, really good. It's about, he grew up in like the early 1900s. His dad died when he was young, and he's like, their whole family is the most like entrepreneurial and industrial family, and really, really, really good. I won't get into like all the really interesting stuff that happens, but.
Cause you got to read it.
Yeah. You got to read it. Read it to your kids, read it to yourself, whatever. I've been reading it to the boys. Jude's always begging me to read it every night. So it's really good.
I think I'm about to start Narnia with Rowan. Is she prepared for that, English teacher?
No.
No?
Reading it to her?
Yeah.
Obviously. I'm dumb. Sorry. I think she can handle it. The question is, which book are you going to start with?
I'm going to start with the best one. The Magician's Nephew.
See, that's where I think you might be going wrong, because I do think that Magician's Nephew is a little bit more complex to appreciate.
Excellent.
There's less story and more imagery.
Beautiful.
Mm. Whereas your five-year-old daughter might like the story, although I agree with you that that's the first book.
I mean, I would assume you'd agree with me if that's the first book. Is that the first one he wrote?
No, but some people think that's not the first book.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the first book.
Some people think that.
Yeah, so
because it's kind of outside. The Magician's Nephew is kind of outside of.
Yeah, it sets it up. It's a flashback.
But you could also read it at the end.
Wardrobe. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can read what at the end?
You can read The Magician's Nephew at the end.
To set up everything that we've already read, like a prequel?
Yeah.
Weird.
I will say, yeah, I think you should start with Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe, just because you're going to have plenty of time to read it to her again, Lord willing. And
thank you. I appreciate that.
And, you know, she'll probably appreciate the story more. I know I did as a child.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right.
All right.
I've got a question too over here. We don't have to talk about it. It's a more serious one that'll probably be worth more time.
Sweet. Reed Hasty, this I think is a good question. It's a helpful reminder. Asks, what's one thing that instantly makes your day better? Hmm. And I would say my kids.
Mm.
Like seeing my kids.
Charles?
I'm just hanging out unless I randomly think of something. So go
ahead. Okay.
I didn't know I was a participant in this Q&A.
So, I don't know. So there's Rowan right now loves to watch me come home on the Find My Friends. Okay.
That's funny.
I love this.
It's like a countdown.
This is literally one of my favorite things. So whenever I call, because you make the phone call, right? You get in the car, you say, hey, I'm on the way home. And you
actually
say,
don't do that.
Weird. Okay. I don't know what to do about it.
I come home at the same time every day.
I call home. I say, hey, love, I'm headed home. And she says, okay, great. I do that for multiple reasons, one of which is to make sure I don't need to pick something up before I get home. So when I get there, I don't have to leave and go get it.
If I did that, we'd talk on the phone the whole way home.
No, we don't do that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why.
Yeah. I say, I'm on my way home. See you in a minute. And she says, okay, bye. And we hang up. And then Rowan says, I want to watch daddy come home. And so she'll watch it. And then when I get home, they're outside and I'll pull up the thing and she hides from me behind my truck after I park it and she tries to scare me.
Sweet.
And so that's a pretty good W.
And then Haddon says, welcome home, dearest father.
He does. I've
memorized 4 catechism questions and answers today.
Apparently Rowan was like shoving people out of the way in catechism this week to tell the answers.
Oh, shout out to Rowan. Yeah.
Was the question one thing that you do to make your day better or one thing
What's
that happens
one thing
to you?
That instantly makes your day better?
Oh, okay.
Like whether it could be unexpected or...
Got it. I've got two things. One is when like Harlan is starting to be really... She's getting to that age where she's like really funny.
Yeah.
So when I walk in, she like comes running in like, dad, 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 dad,
love
dad,
dad, dad.
Like with her, but she puts her hands behind her back and like leans forward and runs her head. So funny. And then some days, like especially if I'm coming home from like out of town or something, but some days Beth will like extra hard work at getting the house like super cleaned up. And
so you come home
and it's like chill and like, not like kids like bounce swinging off the fans and all that stuff, and I'm like
swinging off the fans.
Like, that's what somebody with two boys
and
who
I know
much
that
older
she
says.
Worked like all day so hard and just literally did nothing but clean the house in circles all day for the past like hour to make sure it looked like that. So I really appreciate that because like going into like
chaos
a place. Well, it's like if I walk in and everything's like it looks nice and it's chill.
Your OCDs are okay.
Yeah, I'm like, this is very nice. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
On that one, coming home at the end of the day and dinner being ready, like not like, hey, what are we going to do? What would you like for dinner? I'll be honest with you, like, I don't really want to pick what's for dinner. I just want it to be ready when I show up. Like, I could care less. But, like, there are times where I come home and it's like, hey, I know you were late, but I made this. It's in the microwave, right? And I'm like, the dream. I also like coffee in my Bible.
Oh, that's good.
I know.
Like, little Instagram
in your Bible?
Not either.
Okay. I thought
someone did spill coffee in my Bible about a year ago, and it really hurt me.
So
there's I felt it in my own heart.
So when I work from home, normally on Thursdays and Fridays, mm-hmm. Beth will take the Thursday morning. This may be one of my favorite parts of my week. Mm-hmm. The Thursdays that I get to stay home and I don't have to go like do a morning coffee or something like that. I get up and I grab my coffee cup, which is an Ember cup. Because
first thing you do, put on your jeans.
Accurate.
Get up, put on your jeans, grab your coffee cup.
I thought he slept in his jeans.
Well, he's got to put fresh ones on.
Yeah.
There's pajama jeans.
That's my pajama jeans. That's my pajama jeans.
Outside jeans.
All right. So I get up and I make my way. It's 8 right now. Okay. It's 8. So I make my way to my office, and Beth at this point normally has something to do on Thursdays after she drops Rowan off. So she'll drop Rowan off and she'll take Haddon. And there's just this like 3-hour window where I just drink coffee and I read my Bible on what I'm going to preach on. But it's not study time. It's just like read, be happy time. Like just like read it and like it and grow and like learn what it says. And it's just like, it's just drink it in time. And I always do it like a nice black cup of coffee. It's a sweet time. Tomorrow morning is going to be a good morning. Lord willing.
Hey, you want to go get coffee at like 7 tomorrow
morning? I do not.
I do not. You just want to hang out with somebody. You don't want to hang out with you.
Nope.
What person in the Bible do each of you feel you connect with the most and why? Like, who do you see? I think we can get dangerous with this, but I don't think we have to.
Who is most informative to us?
Well, no, I feel like, no, like...
Who do we identify with?
Yeah, that's the question.
It's a tough one.
I think that it's different at different times, okay? So, like, sometimes I feel like an idiot, and I feel like I identify with Peter in the Gospels. I just say stuff I shouldn't say, and then I just eat my words, and I'm just annoyed with myself.
I feel that, yeah.
And then sometimes I feel like, so for example, in going with Peter as well, I really resonate with the way Peter explains and talks about things in his epistles.
Fair. Okay.
And so like, we all appreciate Paul, but like I just find the ways that Peter says things to be really beautiful.
Fair. So your answer is Peter?
Big Peter guy, I guess.
Big Peter guy. All right, so Charles.
I think David.
That's good.
And I just really appreciate his, especially the Psalms and how he, you know, expresses things that a lot of us maybe would not normally express in regard to how he's just pouring out his heart before the Lord and saying, you know, that even admitting that like he doesn't, there's things that he's not trusting the Lord, but yet he knows that he's faithful and all those things. So I've been, I really like the Psalms.
You know, I think that's astute. And the reason I think that's astute is because I think most people, when someone says, yeah, I identify with David, their first thought is not the Psalms.
Yeah,
it's like I identify with David because, you know, be smashing Goliath's head regularly.
Oh yeah,
yeah. No, I mean, I know that's not what you're doing, but I think
you meant like because he screwed up his life.
Oh yeah, fair. But I mean, I think the Psalm, like when you're looking at the Psalms for real, like I think you see the rawness of the Christian life being laid out there that really does need to be. And I think if we're living faithfully, there's transparency in that,
mm-hmm.
and the danger is always a hiding from that transparency.
Well, you see, too, how David is such a manly man,
yeah.
but at the same time is a very emotional man.
Yeah.
He dances before the Lord.
Right.
Too much to his wife say, hey, man, stop.
Yeah, I mean, dude goes out and, like, you know, kills a lion and a bear and 200 Philistines and all this stuff, and then it's just like, but at the same time, he shows his emotion.
A renaissance man, if you will.
Hmm?
A renaissance man.
A renaissance man. Wow. So this one's
is A.W. Pink in the Bible?
No. and if you asked me if I identify with A.W. Pink, I would tell you no.
That's fair.
Because A.W. Pink did. I think he had an affectionate view of the church in theory, but not in practice.
He lacked a pastoral heart.
He did. I think that's super true. I think I would have...
We can couple this with Michael's question, which is, if you could meet someone in the Bible besides Jesus, who would it be?
They're two totally different answers.
Okay, sorry, I was just trying to help you.
So I think if I had to pick somebody, it would be John.
Fair.
I think the reason that John is called the beloved disciple is not because of the unique love, but because John was still just so shocked that Jesus loved him.
Yeah.
Fair. And so, like, I think that's probably the primary reason why I would plant myself there. And so I think that's helped. Yeah. John has been a great help to me in thinking through, obviously, who Christ is and how to love him and what it looks like to live the Christian life. And also, he has severity in him that I think most people don't see, but you find it in his second and third epistle.
Yeah, that's true.
Where there's some severity attached to it. And I think we can be really soft. And I think John maintained a good gospel clarity, challenging statements, and yet had a firmness and a severity to the way that he spoke.
It's good.
Now, who would I want to meet?
Yeah.
Easiest question. We're not including Jesus in this because
he said specifically besides Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, that just makes it not fair. Apollos.
Oh, super fair.
If I could do this is probably super random, but if I could wish myself into just something random, it would be the ability to both hear and understand Apollos' preaching after he was corrected. Apollos is well spoken of throughout church history as one of the best preachers to ever live, and I would have loved to hear Apollos preach.
Hmm. That's super fair. You got one, Charles?
No, go ahead.
I don't have one either. I'm trying to think. I mean, okay, like, I got all one of them. I don't know.
The writer of Hebrews.
Yeah, find out who he is. Don't look like that.
Just saying.
Lawson.
Yeah.
I'd probably go Luke.
He'd be interesting. He would be interesting.
Just because, yeah, he's just so analytical. I feel like he'd have a lot to say.
That's fair. It would also be super interesting to have a conversation with Pontius Pilate after the resurrection.
Oh, I read a book that imagined what he was like. It was really good.
There are many who would argue that Pontius Pilate was converted.
Yeah. So this book, I think it was called Pontius Pilate.
Oh, wow.
Had to read it in seminary, but it was historical fiction. And,
yeah.
And it was really enlightening. All right. Let's get into a little bit deeper. We'll start with Luke Johnson's question, which is democracy biblical? And I think this is where I think you have to define the word biblical, right? So you got to go with like descriptive, prescriptive.
Yeah, agree.
I think those are all categories that are important. Does the Bible prescribe democracy? No.
No.
Does it describe democracy? Hardly, I would argue.
Yeah.
Are the principles of democracy Christian principles? It's kind of the question that we really have to get at.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
And so, brothers?
So I would say that there are, I would say there's representative themes.
Sure.
I think that
keep
that,
going.
And my original like thought upon this is, there's representative things, and the way that I think about that is actually anchored in Moses and then Jethro.
Yeah.
So there's this very clear statement laid out by Jethro, which is like, hey, you can't do this. You need to set up this type of system so that it's not all coming to your plate.
Yep.
I don't think the intention of that was to set up, here is the biblical way to function inside the civil magistrate. I think there are particular guidelines for a civil magistrate. And the guidelines, I think, are clearly laid out in 1 Corinthians, Romans 13. And in Romans 13, you've got the statement of rewarding good and punishing evil. And I think that that is the primary thing, your primary form of, better yet, the primary outline for government. However, it does not give you, this is the way that government should be done. To maybe add one more thing, there are a multiplicity of governments that man has come up with that are innately sinful.
Sure.
And so that has to be balanced out. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there are some parts of democracy that seem to make sense from a biblical worldview, in the sense that, like, if you take separation of powers or checks and balances, like, I think that those stem from an understanding of total depravity. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
You can't put one man in charge of a group of people because seemingly in his sin it will be corrupted. And we've seen that throughout history.
Yeah.
Apart from Jesus. But I think that's all you can say, right? Like, I don't think that you can, there's no argument to say democracy is biblical. Rather, there are parts of democracy that seem to stem from biblical understandings of the world.
I do think that the way, I'll just an illustration of this, like, I think our three branches of government assume total depravity.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
He was texting, he didn't hear me.
Did you say that they assume total depravity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it basically. Not. I didn't use those words, but yes, that's what I just said.
I really was reading.
Charles, what do you think?
I was, no joke, I was reading a question that I really want to do, and then I was like, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. So I apologize, Blake. I thank you for your profound words.
That's fine.
I
think that, not offended.
I think you have to define democracy, because America is not a democracy.
We're
a constitutional republic.
Republic, indeed.
And everybody calls it a democracy, which I think is
a travesty.
It is a changing of terms by the progressives, the media, and everything to try to make us think that we are a democracy, and we are not.
True.
So the difference is democracy is mob rule. Representative republic is that the people elect representatives to represent them to make decisions and all of those things, which goes back to what you were saying about Jethro. And I think that because of total depravity, true democracy works just as badly as
super fair
as a tyrannical king, because you have anarchy.
It's just a tyrannical king as a group of people.
Right. Yes, pretty much. So I think that's something important to remember. And I think probably an interesting discussion would be, which could be a whole nother podcast. It was election day yesterday, so
I voted.
It's true.
Yeah, I did too.
I'm not an official Mississippi resident
yet. You voted because I told you that it was voting day.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. But I think that there are some things in regard to, like, the Bill of Rights and things that set that assume the rights that are given by the Creator.
Uh-huh.
There are certain unalienable rights, which among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so it would be an interesting discussion to look at those things that are put into our Constitution and Bill of Rights and compare them to biblical truths to see if the things that are espoused in there are simply extrapolations or are really based in biblical principles, or do some of it go outside of that. I think that could be a really interesting discussion.
That would be interesting.
So,
because the document literally assumes these things to be true. These are inalienable rights.
And there's actually a big argument when the Bill of Rights was being created that we should not have a Bill of Rights, because the argument was, if you make a Bill of Rights and you list rights, then you are excluding other things that are actually rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so a lot of people said we shouldn't even have a Bill of Rights, because then you're going to exclude things. And so they kind of landed.
But if we did, and time has proven that if we did not have a Bill of Rights, more and more would have been trampled on.
Right. And so it would. So the rights that are in the Bill of Rights are assumed to be rights given by God. Mm. They are rights that are not given by government.
Yeah.
And so the right to freedom of speech and to keep and bear arms and all of these things are things that are, according to our founding fathers, were given by the Creator. And so I think it would be an interesting discussion to go through each one of those and say, are these truly like rights that are God-given and not given by government, that exist outside of any government?
I like that. That'll be a fun one.
Don, if you're still listening, put it on the docket.
I've already claimed the next one, though, as the deceitfulness of sin. That's what we're going to talk about next week. I'm going to try my best, too, anyway.
Sweet.
I have a good one.
All right, hit us.
So this is from a friend of mine. Should we allow anyone and everyone to take the Lord's Supper with us?
No. Okay. Anyone and everyone?
Like, yeah, so I think...
in Christ, out of Christ?
Well, so... There are three views on this, right? There's open, there's close, there's closed.
Close.
That's what I said.
I know. I'm just
yeah. So
taking us back.
But there are people who would argue that the Lord's table is for anyone and everyone.
Yeah, I don't know where they get it.
What do you mean by allow?
I mean invite. They invite unregenerate people to the Lord's table.
Invite people to eat and drink damnation to themselves.
Exactly, right? So
how do they explain that?
I have no clue. It's the Lord's table. He's gracious and kind. He sets the table. We don't decide who comes from it. I'm sure it's
Like there's a whole parable to say that's not true.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying that it's biblical.
Okay,
it's wrong. It's wrong based on a simple love standpoint. Like if you just want to take it from a love perspective, it's like, oh, if they do this, they're going to eat and drink judgment upon this stuff. Yeah, y'all come.
Well, like, Lawson was like, or not Lawson, Don said one time, he's like, don't steal the children's bread.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite tables he's ever done. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
But yeah, there's open, then there's close, which close is the assumption that anyone who has been baptized can partake of the table, right? Anyone who is in Christ and has been baptized can partake of the table. But you have to clarify then this comes down to, well,
and like not what's under baptism, church discipline.
The difference between a communicant or a non-communicant.
Yeah. I think I'm there, obviously, but I'm there because it feels wrong. And I know this is a terrible argument based on feeling, but you'll hear me out. It feels wrong to deny a brother or a sister who is in whatever situation they're in, they find themselves here. And they're not a covenant member here.
Yeah.
It feels wrong to deny them what we would call a means of grace to
sure.
them.
What if they are unbaptized?
I do wonder where I think that our scriptural standing for unbaptized is like if we know their manner of life. And like maybe it's a scheduling issue that has kept them from being baptized. I think we're hard pressed in the scriptures to find somewhere where they like aren't allowed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think so. If I'm gonna make a really really charitable separation here.
Yeah.
So I think.
I mean, if they're unbaptized because they've been unbiblically baptized,
or willfully unbaptized.
No, of course I would encourage them not to come.
Yeah, you put those in a different category, and you say if you're willfully unbaptized, or if your baptism, I'd air quoted that by the way, if your baptism is not through the appropriate means and methods,
of course,
then it's invalid, and you should not come to the table and partake it. I'm not going to like snatch the cup out of a hand of someone who's repented and believed the gospel and they're going to be baptized next week.
And like they're on the list.
Right, right.
They're on the calendar.
However, I would say, like if they asked me, I would say, hey, just wait. Wait. Right,
that's fair.
The entrance into the church is through baptism. And as you enter the congregation through baptism, then and only then should you come to the table. If you're not going to take the step of obedience, and because I mean, the reality is we tell people, if you've repented and believed the gospel and you would like to be baptized on Sunday, we'll do it. Like, I had the last time we baptized, we had two young men that I talked to on Saturday. We baptized them on Sunday because it only takes 11 minutes to fill a baptistry.
Yeah, but if you're like waiting on grandma to be in town and it's 2 weeks from now, I think that's probably your conscience, right? That's telling you to say to them, don't take.
Yeah. I still think that it's better to isolate the participation in the table to entry and life inside of the local church. And we affirm that the means of entry into the church is through the baptismal waters.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I think the way that we see it ordered is baptism is the means of entry into the church and the table is for those who are members of the church.
Sure.
And then you can get into the conversation of close and closed. But that's a different conversation. And I think it's a worthwhile one. And I think that there's charity should be given on both sides of this, but I think the biblical position is at bare minimum
close. And I would say the reason I won't go all the way to closed is Paul says they are eating and drinking judgment on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we warn them, then if we give out the warning, then I think that is our responsibility.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, we don't even if we live in close community with members of this church, we can't know without a shadow of a doubt that every single one of them, like, we're trying to make sure that every single one of them is regenerate, right?
You're talking about at the Lord's table?
Yeah. Like, we don't have goggles.
No, we don't have goggles. However, we do have church discipline.
Of course. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, that's where I think that the warning is almost not a release of responsibility, but it is, like, I think the appropriate amount of due diligence, like, to say, just know that if you're outside of Christ, like, you are eating and drinking judgment on yourself.
Yeah, I think one of the simple ways to say that is you're placing the locus of judgment on the participant and not the one who is overseeing.
Of course.
And so, like,
that's why I'm close and not closed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If I were to make an argument for the other side of this, is I think that what you're actually looking at is a family table. And true. So I think that when we think about participation in the Lord's table, I think there is oversight and authority and also protection, not only of the elements of the table, but also the congregation in general. And I think it adds the layer that I think is important of what membership is meant to convey, is that there's actual fellowship here in a way that is deeper than just, I show up here on Sunday. Instead, it's like, no, like, we partake of the same table together.
Yeah, one
of the,
hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I again, it's not a hill that I'm going to die on. Close is like, I'll fight tooth and nail for that one.
Of course.
But the difference between close and closed, I can take a reprieve on.
All right. Are you ready for a... This person says this could be a whole episode. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
What do you think about the post-mill reconstructionist theonomist view? Is it biblical, or should we be wary of it? Can you do a whole episode on it one day? Thanks.
We can do a whole episode on it one day.
You don't want to discuss it.
I just don't think, I don't think that I've got the time, or frankly, the precision that I need to speak to that.
all right, we're going to get Lawson really fired up. Speaking of Baptist principles, our last question. Are you ready?
I have one more that we have to do.
Oh, do you want to do yours first?
Or? Yeah, so we can be brief on it, but I have to because it's from my friend Keith and his daughter Carrie.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for calling in.
So what presuppositions are necessary for sitting under the preaching of God's word, or what beliefs are imperative on the congregant's part in preaching?
Ooh, so I love, you know, Augustine was really big on, like, the Bible will come alive to you if you just believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if the belief comes first, and then the truth is so much clearer. I mean, I think you have to assume that what you're hearing is the word of God explained.
Mm-hmm.
That the speaker's goal is to give you the word and to get out of the way.
I think that's great. Charles, I care deeply about your answer here.
Ask the question again.
What presuppositions are necessary for sitting under the preaching of God's word, or what beliefs are imperatives on the congregant's part in preaching?
I mean, you have to believe in the sufficiency of Scripture.
Okay.
You have to believe in the authority of the office of elder.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that, but not necessarily everybody that doesn't mean that everybody that preaches will necessarily be an elder, but most of the time on a Sunday would be. I think that's the main things. I mean, I think we have to come expecting, like Blake said, expecting to hear from the word of God and come prayerfully that the Holy Spirit will not only speak through the one preaching, but also open the hearts of the ones hearing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all that. One of the things you said, which is come prayerfully, I think one of the expectations of the Christian should be an expectation of God is going to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that's a, pardon me. I think that's a, sorry, my phone was behind me. It was ringing. I think that's an important disposition because I think it's really easy for us to come in and say, oh, a sermon. But not too long ago, someone mentioned listening to a sermon. Oh, it was you. You and I were talking about this. Is that God curates.
You being Charles.
He being Charles. I said God curates 52 sermons for every member of his church every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like God has curated 52 Lord's Days, 52 sermons. And I think it's important for us to presume God gave me this diet for me. Mm-hmm. And the most interesting thing about it is as the preached word goes out, it's doing, if there's 200 people here, right? It's doing 200 different things.
Mm-hmm.
One word, nothing's different. Literally nothing's different. And yet, if you ask 100 people what their walk away was, you might have a couple of common factors, but more often than not, you're going to have, oh man, that one thing that may not have even been in the notes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, jump, it was like, that was it. And it was like, bro, that was a sentence that was just like, I just kind of, right? Mm-hmm. And nonetheless, it's what God uses. So I think those are all good things. All right.
And I really think that it's super important to come understanding that the sermon that your local pastors have prepared, it's like what you're saying, is the most important sermon that you can hear.
That's
and
good.
So like Beth said the other day, I don't think, if you're a member of a local church, she said, I don't think that you should listen to any other sermons that week until you've listened to the sermons that your pastor preached at least one more time. Because she's like, if you don't have
the
time.
Is that not the most base statement ever?
She's like, if you don't have, if you have that limited amount of time, then you don't need to be going off and being like, yeah, this was pretty good. Now I'm going to go listen to John Piper or John MacArthur or somebody else.
Well, H.B. Charles is like,
this is against my presupposition about preaching, which is that it's meant for the moment.
Agreed.
That's why I don't listen to the sermons afterwards. Mm. And that's, again, that's like my conviction and my opinion. And I know a lot of people do, but I think that God in his providence sent that sermon for that day, for that moment,
with those songs.
Yeah, that's really good. And I agree with that. I think when I'm re-listening, it's as a reminder of that
moment. Of course. Yeah, I'm not saying anything bad about listening again.
Yeah, I don't think
interesting, though, because that is a thought of preaching that I had before coming to Mercy Hill that I hadn't really thought about, that preaching is for that moment in person.
Yep.
And because I'd always been like big on listening to sermons all day long while I'm at work kind of thing. And it really made me appreciate more, you know, being with the gathered body of the saints in that moment, hearing preaching in person.
Well, it's who you're looking at and who you're, you know, who you're experiencing as you experience the sermon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's real. All right.
Dang, I really hate to ruin that really great conversation and ask you this. What are your thoughts on the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission in the SBC? Specifically, its value and contribution to the local church today. And before you start, gather yourself, gird your loins. Do you think, and this is a follow-up question from me, not from our original asker, by the way, Carver just asked this because he's got to write a paper.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think that the ERLC was ever begun to serve the local church specifically.
It was added to fight for religious liberty in the United States of America.
Right. And so I think I hear his question, but I also think just because it doesn't contribute to the local church today doesn't mean it's not doing what it was designed to do.
Okay. I hear you.
And I'm not saying it's right.
Oh, no. I'm not
about to defend it.
I'm good. I'm
fine. Just saying.
Blake's talking to us to calm me down. Give me room. Okay, so repeat the question and let me
answer. What are your thoughts? This is a terrible question because it's just a free-for-all. What are your thoughts on... The first question is, what are your thoughts on the ERLC? Specifically, though, you can give us general thoughts, but specifically, he wants to know its value and contribution to the local church today.
Okay. Based upon everything you've said and with those nuances, the ERLC offers absolutely nothing to the local church. It doesn't. I do not know a single pastor who has called the ERLC and the ERLC then come to the rescue.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But to be fair, what would we want?
I mean, I think there's a number of things that you could want. You could want a religious liberty for protection of your right to say no to particular people who want to get married in the church or something of that nature.
But I mean, they're writing things for that. Right?
They're writing things for that.
Yeah, but I mean, at what point?
Yeah, no,
in the size of the SBC,
sure,
they'd have to have as many employees as like the IRS to be able to do what you're saying.
No, I disagree. But I mean, think about that. Like when there's actually some major religious liberty issue that comes up,
sure,
it would then be the Ethics and Religious Liberty Council to step into that and volunteer their time, their energy without spending boo-koodles of money on the local church itself.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So like, I think that's a net loss. From there, the last major win of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Council is that they secured the religious liberty of a mosque.
Sure.
I mean, like that's actually,
but I think that's been an argument, a pretty widespread Baptist argument.
Yeah. But I'm saying like,
that if mosques don't have the liberty to be open, then we will lose ours.
And I hear that. I'm just trying to figure out why Baptists paid for it.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet that the vast majority of Southern Baptists who are giving their dollars to the cooperative program or giving their dollars to the SBC are like, man, I'm so glad my $10 went to defending a mosque being put in this particular realm. Like, I think that's probably not the best route.
Yeah. I would like to see how much of the, like how much money went to that. You know what I mean?
Fair.
Because I think there are, like, if you look into the ERLC, there are plenty of good things that are happening. They're paying for ultrasound machines to be put into crisis pregnancy centers. Like that's probably one of their bigger initiatives these days.
That's from the ERLC.
Yes, brother. It's called the Psalm 139 Project.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Glad, grateful for that.
They're paying for, looks like even in our state, they have paid for ultrasound machines to be placed in pregnancy care centers.
That's anchored in the ERLC specifically.
Yes, brother. It's called.
Okay. I'm just clarifying statements.
I think beyond that,
yeah,
they're a bureaucratic agency.
Okay,
that writes stuff to be sent to government leaders that probably doesn't make that much of a difference.
Super fair. Do you not? So here's my other thing. I think that one of the biggest issues with the ERLC is the way in which I agree. Like this is good. I'm grateful that they are sending sonogram machines into these areas so that women who are considering having an abortion can see their unborn child and know that they are going to take a human life.
Sure.
Okay. Agree with that. Grateful for that. My issue is like there have been multiple times where they have stepped in and warred against,
they're not abolitionists.
They're not abolitionists. Yes. And in my view, I think the ERLC regularly advocates for unjust laws.
Fair.
So if you're arguing, so just a simple question, and I think this is an important question. Is it a just law to say, or to argue for, to support a law that says, hey, we think that abortion should be limited to the first 6 weeks of life. Is that a just law?
No.
No, it's not a just law.
Right.
It's an unjust law. And so to say that abortion is permissible up until this point is an unjust law that says it's okay to murder your baby as long as that baby is not older than 6 weeks. That is innately an unjust law. And one of the major things that tipped my scales on this was Louisiana.
Yeah.
So in Louisiana, there was a bill set forth that would essentially abolish, but it would also charge the woman with murder.
Yeah.
And the ERLC stepped in and said, we believe that this is not good. This is not in the pro-life agenda. But the reality is that if you take a human life, you're a murderer.
True.
And while it may be super unpopular to say, I don't care if you took that life in your womb or outside of it.
Right.
If you are hiring someone to murder a human being, then you are guilty of that crime.
Yeah.
And so I think the danger of the ERLC is playing this political game as opposed to actually pursuing the ends of biblical Christianity inside the public arena. And so that's really where I land. I agree with you that there, I'll say this way, are there good things the ERLC does?
The ERLC says good things. It just like Doug Wilson.
And the giving of sonograms, praise the Lord for that.
But don't go in and assault just laws with the intention of replacing them with unjust laws.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, we obviously agree that those are unjust things, but I would also say that there are Baptists, even like very smart Baptists, who disagree on the means of prosecuting would-be mothers who abort their children.
I agree that there are people who believe that.
I know that you think they're wrong. Yeah, and I do too. I'm just saying, like, we don't see it as complicated, but there are across even Baptists who would agree with us on most theological issues who disagree with us on this.
Yeah, there are.
I'm thinking about like Denny Burke.
Does Denny Burke disagree with that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because traditionally the pro-life view has not been.
I know, he just went down like two notches.
Oh
my
gosh. See, that's
a... I mean, that's just, to me, this is so base level. And if you place this anywhere else in society or anywhere else in time, it's like, oh, you murdered a baby.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go, Carver. That's what we think about the ERLC. I mean, I do think that largely we're wasting money.
Yeah, if we got to Indianapolis and someone said, I think I know someone who's going to say.
Someone tried it last year.
Yeah. And it should be tried every year until it's disbanded.
Right.
It's like, why would we spend money on this? I think that recently some things happened with the person who is over the ERLC. I think he's a snake in the grass. Like, I really do think that. I just do. Like, I think, I mean, to be real honest with you, the previous head of the ERLC kind of gave me some... He's proven himself to be a snake in the grass. So
at least to not be a Baptist.
At least to not be a Baptist. So, I don't know. Those are unfiltered thoughts.
Disseminated to the entire world.
Yeah. I'd be okay with doing a post-mill theonomy reconstructionist conversation in full. Sweet. I would need to bite onto that hobby horse for a while so that I could build it out.
Of course. Yeah. I hear you. Well, I'd like to thank my fellow brothers, Lawson Harlow and Charles Kinard, for the time spent today. And brothers, I think we found out at the beginning of this episode that there are stupid questions. My brothers and my friends, Godspeed.
Are the questions primarily banter? Because if they are primarily banter, let's just skip the banter and go straight to the questions and allow the questions to be the banter.
All right.